This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday,
y'all already know.
A podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangster rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I guess I never thought I would be like someone who really was attached to the mainstream that much, which is funny, which is why I think I found the Brits quite an amazing but like an accelerated experience, because I never thought I wrote pop songs for the charts.
Go, hit it. Evening, folks. Welcome to another new episode of Midnight Chats, our music interview podcast for late night listening. My name's Greg. I'm here with Stu. Stu, what is the big news in your world?
Well, I've been moving house, so I've just mainly been a ball of stress. But I think I've turned a corner now. Now that I've moved, I'm feeling a lot better. We've had a very busy time here on the podcast as well. Thank you to everyone who listened to our Brian Eno episode last week. That did very well, including getting some shares on David Bowie's Instagram account, which was nice to see. This week, I've recorded two new episodes, one of which is going to be next week's episode. We're going to turn that one around quickly, and we're going to hold on to the other one for a bit later down the line. But let's talk about tonight's episode, Greg, because you spoke to Griff, and I'll be honest, before I listened to this, I didn't know that much about Griff myself. I didn't know much about her background or what she's been up to. And in case there is anyone tuning in who is in a similar boat to that, tell us a bit about Griff herself and also why you wanted to talk to her, because you've wanted to speak to her for a while.
Well, I've wanted to speak to Griff. I've been excited to meet Griff ever since I saw her performance on the Brit Awards, which was back in 2021. She played her song Black Hole, which is a pop banger. And I was just floored, because I don't remember a new artist ever delivering such like an accomplished, impactful like performance at the Brits, basically. She looked like she'd been doing this for like 20 years. And I just from that point was like, wow, like this is somebody really, really special. If you haven't seen that Brits performance, it is on YouTube. Griff says that she can't bear to watch it. But I've put a link in the show notes if you haven't seen it, and you can go and have a look at it along with some of the other things that we mentioned in this conversation.
I do remember that performance and how amazing it was. And for someone who is still so young as she is now, when she was talking to you, it really sounded like she's someone who just knows exactly what she wants to do.
Oh, definitely. I think she's 23 now and she's super grounded. There didn't seem to be sort of, you know, there wasn't anything kind of mechanical about her, if you know what I mean.
She wasn't
So she was just really, really open and just really, really lovely to chat to. But the big news is that she's just announced her debut album, and it's going to be coming out on the 19th of July, and it's called Vertigo. And she's announced a big tour later in the year, playing some massive venues. So that's exciting, because like her show is immense as well. So it's basically, it's gonna be a big year for Griff.
Here it is then. Greg talking with Griff on tonight's episode of Midnight Chats. If you're new to us here, welcome. If you've been here before, welcome back. Thank you for listening to Midnight Chats. We love making this podcast. If there's one thing you can really do to help us and to help the show, is simply tell a friend, force them to listen. that's the way that this podcast is going to grow, and we're going to get more people listening to it. So if you are enjoying the episodes, please do tell your friends who like music all about it, and join us on social media. We've sort of ditched TikTok, to be honest, but we are on Instagram, Midnight Chats Pod. There's lots of clips there. We've put some bits of Griff. There's some stuff from the Eno episode last week. Before that, we had MGMT. We're trying to ramp that up a bit and have a bit of fun with it. So join us over there, Midnight Chats Pod. For now, though, here is Griff on tonight's episode of Midnight Chats.
This will obviously exist in the world in a future time, but today is release day. Well, no, I shouldn't probably say that, actually. But anyway, it's been a hectic day. But it's good. I think
we can say it's release day. It's fine because people will understand that, like, yeah. We've done this in the past. We're speaking to our future selves.
Yeah, exactly.
Miss Me Too.
Miss Me Too.
You're going to be sharing it later on today.
Yeah, exactly.
Do release days feel exciting? Do they feel stressful? Do they feel...
I'm getting better at them. I don't love them. They're not fun. There's no part of me that wakes up and goes, oh, yeah, release day. Because they're stressful and there's usually lots to do and you're usually just pretty nervous about how it's going to be received. And it's the moment where a song has been sitting on your laptop for ages and then is out in the world. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
All in all, happy to be here.
Yeah. What a start to the year that you've had, though. 2024, we're not far into it. You've packed it in.
It's been busy, yeah.
Yeah, so you... celebrated New Year pretty much on stage in Australia, is that right?
Well researched, yeah. Yeah. I went to Australia twice in January, which is just suicidal, really.
My God.
I know.
So what, out there, back again,
yeah,
out there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oof, how was your jet lag?
Yeah, brutal. I mean, I did a festival out there for New Year's, which was fun. It was my first time ever in Australia. Came back, finished a bunch of music, then went back out to like Asia and Australia and then America and then... here I am, back to release some music, yeah.
On the upside, you must have seen pretty much every film that, like, the airline has to offer now.
Do you know, I try my best not to, and I'm a sleeper. I can sleep anywhere, on anything, at any time of day. So I actually don't... by the time I wake up, I haven't gotten around to, like, seeing the entertainment.
I'm so jealous of that.
So no,
what, you could get on a
pretty
bus
much.
And fall asleep.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you gave me 15 minutes right now, I would probably be out.
So many artists would be listening to this going, like, I'm so jealous. Because, like, the touring thing is hard.
Yeah, it's brutal.
And so, like, if you can catch a nap when you're in the airport, and that's fine.
Yeah, it helps the jet lag. Like, usually I can usually be anywhere. If I can power nap for 45 minutes, I'm pretty good. Yeah, so that's what my days look like. Yeah.
So, seeing in the new year on stage, have you ever done anything? What would you have normally been doing?
I probably would have been... chilling with some girlfriends. I've never done New Year's abroad, let alone in a hot place. That was kind of freaky. Mm. But it was really nice. I was out there with Holly. Well, we happened to both be on the same lineup, so I think we just were like, let's buddy up and be friends. So yeah, we got wasted and popped champagne on the stage, which was really fun. The footage is actually terrible though, because you can tell we're not party girls and we're absolutely amateurs. We were like, yeah, let's pop some champagne. And then when you look back, we clearly forgot to do the thumb over the thing. So we were essentially just pouring the bottle on all over these cables. But it was nice. It was fun.
That's something you could get used to. Like, I mean, learning how to pop champagne. Like,
yeah, I know. Who would have thought I'd need to know that? I know.
So after that, I mean, you, like you said, you were in the Far East doing some shows, and then you went to the States.
I did.
Grammys?
Popped in, not, I wasn't at the actual Grammys. I went to an after party, which was like fun. Those things are, again, never been to a Grammy after party. Lots of famous people.
Was there?
Yeah, that's fun.
Any spots that you were like, even outside of the music world, anybody you were just like, oh, I'm in the room with this person?
That room was, it was mainly music people, but it was just like, who was it? I'm trying to think. Who was like really famous? I mean, Ed Sheeran came down. He's pretty famous.
Yes.
I think Selena Gomez was there. Barry Keoghan, the actor. He was there. The guy in Saltburn.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So that was cool. Like, Dua was there, Twilly. Yeah, lots of famous people. It's quite weird.
Yeah, and some people that you actually know. Like,
yeah, that's true, actually.
So it's quite nice, a bit of a catch-up.
Yeah, nice, like, quickly say hi, and then the music's so loud you can't even really talk, but yeah.
Yeah. So this year has been, is this going to be kind of typical of how this year pans out? Because you're like heading overseas to play like some big shows. You're no doubt kind of trying to continue to write music. You're sharing music. Mm. All this stuff going on. Is that the kind of, you're switching modes a lot, right? Is that how
it
feels?
Yeah, it does. It's weird now, I think, being an artist, because I don't know, to me, when I went into this, I always understood an artist's job in cycles. So you tour, and then you write, and then you promo, and those cycles last for good lengths of time. Whereas now, it feels like you kind of have to do all of it at the same time, and there's no mercy. So, yeah, it's like one day you've got your tour hat on, next day you've got your promo hat on, and your socials hat on, and then next day you're trying to write. So yeah, it's all happening at the same time, but I'm excited. It's been a while since I've released music, so it's nice to be back in the flow of it.
Definitely, yeah. And we're going to talk about some of that music that you've shared recently. As we speak, it's Brits Week in the UK. Are you going this year?
I am. I'm going to pop in, yeah.
Pop in. I love the way you say pop in. It's like as if we're going to sort of Tesco Express.
Yeah, just going to Tesco, pop in, see what the new kids on the block,
just
you know.
Pick up some bits.
Yeah.
Just tonight's dinner.
Wave to a few friends, take a photo, and then pop out.
Yeah. As I was kind of looking forward to chatting to you today, I was went back and watched your Brits performance from 2021.
Oh God.
And does that make you feel a bit like...
Yeah, that fills me with the same nerves that I had at the time. I've never watched it since.
Have you not?
I think I watched it back once after my performance and then that was it.
I want to tell you a story about what I was watching it that night, because I felt... I must be honest, I don't always watch the Brits, but I was watching that night.
That seems like a choice, since you're a music person.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it because you don't get around to it, or because you're like, I'm anti-awards, I'm anti-establishment?
No, I'm a bit anti-establishment. Mm-hmm. I like to think of myself as anti-establishment. No, just like, I think sometimes I'm kind of like, yeah, I want to catch it, and other times I want to tune out of it.
Yeah.
And I just remember, I mean, first off, that was a weird year because it was like...
Super weird.
I think we were all feeling like super hungry for music and missing it, because it was 2021, so we were like emerging from lockdowns and like COVID pandemic. So it had its own sort of surreal spin for those reasons.
Yeah.
But I remember your performance. I was sat on the sofa with my wife, and you came on, and I was like, my God, like, you are, it was so assured, and it was so, like, it was amazing, like, composed.
Thanks.
And I was just considering that, like, you know, what a platform, what a, like, surreal moment that must have been to find yourself in, and like, probably, undoubtedly, super nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
It was as if you'd played the Brits, like, 20 years in a row.
Oh, that's really kind.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But you suggested that probably what was actually the feeling in your stomach?
That time was, it was just so a lot. Because it's, again, I think, like you said, it felt really extreme because of COVID. So I've sat in my bedroom for 2 years. And then suddenly everyone was like, right, go on, like... And we've all grown up watching the Brits, and I've seen the most iconic performances. So I was just like, really nervous. And then you're also performing for like a room full of everyone you look up to, and you know that there's however many people watching online, and you know it's going to exist online forever. It was just it's like the worst recipe for social anxiety. I remember waking up the next day just like feeling so sick and looking, like, dreading looking at my phone, but also like torturing myself by like trying to look at all the feedback on it. But no, I am proud of it and I am happy with it, but yeah, I can't watch it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should be. I was like, holy shit, that is incredible. Like, what a performance.
Thank you.
Because I think, the Brits produces like those iconic moments, and sometimes they come from Adele and one spotlight and a piano, and other times they come from an artist that's like gonna have been like new to a lot of people. And that's that is one thing that I do appreciate about the Brits. But I think that was a particularly weird year because it was like not even half full, right? Because it was social distancing, and so like all the artists were there sat at like little
it was really strange. We were all really far away from a table, not too much, probably the same size as this, but I guess it's my only real experience of the Brits. It'll be interesting to go this year where we're properly free again, because I haven't experienced the Brits in that kind of heyday feeling where everyone's just getting drunk on the floor with Jack Whitehall just taking the mick out of everyone. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm excited to experience that kind of Brits because it's been pretty COVID-y since. So yeah,
it has. Yeah. And that that night, was that when you first got to meet Taylor Swift?
Yeah, it was. That was just like the cherry on the cake at the end of the night. After I've done all the, like, again, first real red carpet experience, first real like press experience, did the big performance, got the award, sat down, Taylor Gott gets her award. She kind of like said my name in the mic just to say hi. That was scary enough. And then the night had ended and we were walking back to our dressing room, and then my manager kind of took me on a detour and he was like, time to meet Taylor. And I was like, oh my God. and so went into her dressing room, said hi, we chatted for a bit, and she was really lovely, yeah. Mm.
She was eating some chips.
She was eating chips, offered me a chip.
Did she?
Yeah, it was lovely. Because people don't eat at those events, so I was relieved to see a whole rider full of chips. It was great, yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. And like, yeah, I mean, it's not just like big artist co-signs another emerging artist, you know, that's a nice to have or a nice feeling, because Taylor, since like your real kind of formative years of discovering music, has been like an important artist to you and somebody who's like been a big influence, like her songwriting and everything else. So regardless of whether it was Taylor Swift or if Taylor Swift didn't have billions of fans, even if it was just like your songwriting idol, that would have been like an important moment, right?
Definitely, yeah. There are two layers to it, where it's like, firstly, you're being like recognised by someone who's completely at the peak of their game, but also, yeah, being recognised by someone who I just really, who raised my creative journey, I guess. And I think she's obviously renowned for raising a new generation of songwriters, but I was definitely there at 8 years old listening to Fearless. She's pretty amazing.
Yeah. She's doing about a billion gigs at Wembley Stadium this summer.
It's insane. It's like, how do you even get that big? It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got a ticket?
Do you know what? Confession, I don't. No, I know. I don't know. The whole, like, I was never raised going to gigs, so I don't really have the gig culture in me. Mm-hmm. This whole Swifty cult is a new thing. I don't know, this is like a new thing, isn't it? Kind of the level of cult that Swifties are. I was just on my way to school listening to Taylor Swift, obsessed with it, but I didn't realise there was like so much commitment with it. So, and also, I don't know, in my head, I just will be there.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm just putting that out there, that I'll find my way there, but I don't know, I'm not organised enough to do all the queues and the pre-orders and the pre-sales and fight people for it. I don't know. Yeah. I'll just say a prayer and hopefully I'll make it.
You're just going to have to... just going to have to be one of the supporting artists.
Well, Taylor, if you're listening, I need to see the show. So if you don't mind, just maybe, instead of just a ticket, maybe, yeah. And anyway, I'll be there, yeah.
I want to talk about kind of background and your upbringing. You're from Kings Langley.
Kings Langley, yeah.
Which is a sleepy village.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been?
Well, I grew up in Welwyn Garden City.
Oh, okay, so you're not far.
Hertfordshire.
Northwest suburbs.
Exactly, too far away. For people that don't know,
for everyone who doesn't know, nobody knows. Yeah,
exactly. Although Kings Langley kind of like punches in terms of like Anthony Joshua's from Kings Langley.
Yeah,
it?
We've got one or two claim to fame. Anthony Joshua. I can't remember if there's any others. And I guess we've got the Watford football team, which Elton John has, you know, made famous. We've got Harry Potter Studios.
Yeah.
In Watford.
Been?
No.
No, I've never been either.
No. And also, our big claim to fame is that I think tale has it that the Game of Thrones writer or something was on the train past King's Langley, and that's why it's somewhere in Game of Thrones is called King's Landing.
Oh, okay.
I could be chatting absolute shit, but I think that's the rumour, yeah.
King's Langley's doing all right. You are like one of the most famous people to ever come out of King's Langley.
I mean, I think the population is about 5,000 people, so I don't know how impressive that is, but yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
For everyone else, probably most people listening to this, just describe your kind of King's Langley, kind of sleepy village, like very quaint, like beautiful little place.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty English countryside. I mean, it's weird because it's proximity to London. It's like only 45 minutes out, but it definitely feels like countryside. There's farms, there's cows, there's old people, there's pubs, a lot of grass, and that's about it.
Churches. Do you love a country walk?
Yeah, love a country walk. Yeah. Country walk and a country pub is kind of all there is to do, to be honest. Yeah. So, not loads going on. Didn't actually resented it growing up. Not diverse at all. Very white, very middle class. So we definitely, and again, the population is not very big. So I think as a family, we definitely stuck out wherever we went. Yeah,
because you're like, in terms of your family heritage, you've got like, you've got Jamaican, you've got Chinese. First off, I would bet cuisine and like culture in your house is so rich with so many great things.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I only realize it when I get asked about it and talk about it in this context. Because when you're growing up, it's just, that's just home. So you're not there going, oh, wow, I've got such a culturally rich upbringing. You're there going like, I don't fit in and my home is weird. Mm. But yeah, I mean, mum's pretty typical Chinese tiger mother. They're not quiet breeds of mothers. and, you know, very hard on discipline. Dad is, again, pretty stereotypically chilled out Jamaican dad. Two older brothers. Mum cooked most, so it was mainly a lot of Asian food. But I think dad really brought in the music and the creativity. And I think music is such a rich part of Black culture. So I think that was ingrained in us from a very young age. And then we also started fostering when I was about 8. Mm. So then there was a lot of, kind of foster siblings in the house as well. So it was, yeah, mad.
I have friends who are foster parents. And for me, it's like one of the most generous things that anybody can ever do, to be honest. I think it's such like a warm-hearted and generous like gift to be able to like, to welcome somebody into your family and make them one of your own.
It's a lot, yeah. I mean, it's not it's not for the weak. Or what's the saying? Not for the light-hearted? It's intense. It's a 24-hour job. Do you know what I mean? It's not, yeah, it's definitely not like you do a few hours of charity and then give them back. It's like they're there to live with you and be part of the family. So
yeah,
you gotta get stuck in.
Where did music become like such a big deal for you? Was it something that you had for you that was your time, that was like that you could concentrate on, or like a bit of a refuge? Is that how it emerged as something that you got so engrossed with?
Yeah, I think it was that. I think I grew up, we grew up in church as well, so that was a big thing. And like, I just remember, like, obviously the sermons were so boring and the music was the fun bit. So every time there was the praise and worship, it was cool. And I think I was fortunate to grow up in a church that had quite modern music as well. So it wasn't like hymns, it was band, and it was like proper pop choruses almost. Mm. So I think that was like my first realization that I really enjoyed music. And then, it became something that I think I felt good at doing. And I enjoyed, also my parents were so, the combination of like immigrant ethnic parents means that, like, I don't know, it was very strict, no TV in the week. Mm. And then also very Christian parents meant that even the TV we were allowed to watch was very sheltered. Mm. So in terms of entertainment and like what you do with your spare time as a kid, it was like, well, I'll just play the piano then for hours. Mm. And so that became, yeah, like a safe place for me, I think. Especially in like school when I didn't feel that good about myself. And I don't think I realised, it's only in reflection and in hindsight that I realised that I didn't really feel secure or belonging in school. And I think I kind of used music as a bit of a safe space for that. So, yeah.
Mm. I think people identify that in your music as well and gravitate towards it. So like you're sharing in that respect, I think it's really important.
I hope so, yeah.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said, my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, a podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap. Hosted by MC8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangsta rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangsta rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's go.
I want to kind of like bring things into the present a bit more, or rather like bring things into the past couple of years a little bit more, because we talked a bit about the Brits, like you're kind of, it was incredibly like accelerated everything that happened for you around like, 2000, 2001.
2001, when I was born.
Sorry, yeah,
exactly. That was accelerated.
You came flying out.
I wasn't in the world then. I was. It was a pretty crazy experience, actually.
It was sad.
Yeah.
It was like going on a water slide.
The world. Oh my god. It's like, here I am.
This is big. It's fast. It's faster than I thought it was going to be.
Here we go, mum and dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. Sorry.
Around 2020, 2021. There was so much going on. Like you were kind of taking your first steps in music, and then very quickly, like finding yourself on some like massive stages in terms of the supporting Coldplay on tour, going on the Future Nostalgia tour with Dua Lipa, getting to play with Ed Sheeran. Like, how did you find those adjusting to those experiences, stadiums, and like all that kind of stuff?
It was really intense, if I'm totally honest. Again, coming out of a few years of COVID and then never have toured before, and then straight onto a tour bus. I mean, most artists will talk about how brutal touring is. And so to kind of go straight into it on that scale was a lot. It was a lot to learn. There's so much of touring that there's no rule book on, that no one gives you any warning of. It's like down to the relentlessness of just being around people every day, you know, and building your team and like waking up to your like, you know, your backline guy and your drummer and in the tour bus, and then performing every night, and just the resilience around that, and just like vocal training and performance, and also how to engage a crowd. And then also like the other side of it is that you don't make any money really. So then that's the whole thing. And then just being away from home and being away from family. It definitely felt like I was kind of in boot camp for touring very quickly.
Did you bring any mementos back from any of those tours?
I guess the one that came to mind is like sitting, when I sat down with Chris Martin and listened to the music, I still have kind of the notes that he wrote down about all my songs, and he wrote a lovely little letter just to encourage me. So that's something I'll always have. But otherwise, I don't know, it's also so lame, but because we take so much stuff on our phones now, I feel like all my memories are just like on there. That's such a like Gen Z thing to say, but yeah.
Since you bring it up, obviously you went on tour with Coldplay, you got to spend some time with Chris Martin when you went to record Astronaut. I've met Chris Martin before. He's always seemed very, it was very like warm and like, very like, humble and sensitive and quite generous guy.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And so, what was your experience like? Was he encouraging? How did he? Because he's like very collaborative, and I'm always interested to hear of like what artists are like in that mode, because some people are better at giving advice or encouragement or feedback than others, and like you can't. I don't know what Chris Martin's like in that scenario.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. I mean, I constantly felt guilty that I was taking up too much of his time because it was so generous of him. Like, firstly, like him offering to listen to some music, I just thought he was being polite. And then it actually happened. And that whole day, I just was like, oh my God, this is so, not embarrassing, but like, oh my God, he's got so many things to do. He's Chris Martin. He doesn't have an evening to spend listening to my music. But that was really, he was really encouraging. And I think he read me really well. Like, I was listening to the music so nervous. Like, I literally couldn't make any eye contact. I was staring at the ground. He like stopped the music. He was like, chill, this is amazing. Like, he was so encouraging in the right moments. And I think he really, it's amazing how he switches from like super social Chris Martin and then also switches straight into like music Chris Martin. And then suddenly is speaking that language and giving such helpful music feedback. Like, that's the chorus, even though that you think that's your middle eight, that's your chorus. Or like, that's actually the title of the song, even though you think that's the title of the song. That kind of perspective was really, really helpful. And so, yeah, it was crazy. But it's also, I don't know, I felt like the whole time I was just trying to not think about the fact that I was in the studio with Chris Martin, but I'm sure I was then coming across like really, really fucking weird. But I don't know. Because I'm there like, just be cool. But then sometimes I'm like, maybe I was too cool and maybe I needed to be more like, I don't know. I'm such a in my head person. But no, he was amazing.
And he left you with a message of encouragement. He wrote something for you, like a kind of like a little letter or something.
Yeah. Well, we sat down and listened to a lot of songs. And so he was like, right, let's start getting like, you know, pen and paper. So he was like, you write down your favorite songs. I'll write down my favorite songs. And then just at the end, he just wrote a nice little note just to say that the album's great, the music's great, and it's going to be great, which is nice.
Amazing. That's got to be framed somewhere, right?
I know. I actually found it, like, crumpled up. I thought I'd lost it, and I was like, oh my God, no way have I lost the note. And then I found it, like, the bottom of a tote bag amongst a load of other touring shit. So, no, I know. Terrible. So now I've, like, put it on my side. I need to put it in a frame.
Definitely. Yeah. That one needs to go in the memory box.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent. Exactly.
Let's talk about your new music. Miss Me Too, you released not too long ago. Love that track. And it's kind of, you described it as sort of something that came about in a sense of like rediscovering or questioning what it means to sort of come out of adolescence and just sort of reshaping who you are, make it like kind of just trying to connect with that sense again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Now when I talk about what the song's about, I'm like, oh my God, I hope it doesn't come across in a really like cheesy way, because it wasn't. Yeah, it was a song about wanting to find yourself. I think it's more like, I think along the long old road of life, I don't know, you do kind of lose fragments of yourself, whether it's in relationships or time periods, or you've lived in one place and you move, you lose bits of yourself. And I think it's just about kind of retracing those steps and figuring out where it is you lost those bits. And sometimes it's good to lose a bit of yourself, and sometimes there's actually a sense of yourself that you really need to get back. And I think that's kind of what the song is about. And that's why I love that the production's super high energy and hopeful, because even though the lyric is quite sad, I think there is a sense of hope where it's just like there's a sense of searching for yourself again. Yeah.
And you shared it amongst a group of songs, a collection of songs that make up volume 2 of Vertigo.
Yeah.
To write those songs, am I right in thinking you booked out some different Airbnbs and like just because in the past you've done so much, you're writing at home in the space that you've created, your like home studio, right?
Yeah. So I think there were a few things. I suddenly felt pressure to write, which is a feeling I've never had with writing, because writing was always for me. And then like post-Brits and everything, everyone was like, where's the album? I'm like, I don't know, I've been on tour. And so that dynamic was there. So I think being in Airbnbs was me almost trying to trick my brain into feeling like I was in a low pressure environment, you know, because I don't want the label to book me out a big fancy studio. I'll be so conscious of how much it costs and the time and how productive it is that I almost wouldn't tell the label when I'm going away to write, because it's better. I don't want people asking me, you know, for my homework at the end of the day. Mm. And then also for some reason, I always used to be able to make music at home and make loads of noise at home, not feeling like I was being heard too much. And I think there was the element of just like, my mum's so busy, my dad's out of work, my brothers are boys, so they don't care, like the screaming kids, like I could blast a song and honestly I would come out and it'd be so hectic outside of the house, in the house, that it just didn't matter. Whereas I think from COVID, things were so focused and intense, and dad suddenly working from home and we had some kid changes. I suddenly just felt very self-conscious about making noise in the house. So I knew I couldn't write at my family home. So that's kind of why I started just booking little Airbnbs. And there's a fun feature on it, on the desktop version, where you can, if you just scroll a little bit, you can filter in where a piano is.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So that's all I do, really. I just go on. When I'd get back in between tours and I knew I had like maybe 2 weeks, I would just put the piano filter on and find one that felt like it wasn't going to blow the budget, and then drive a few hours, and then like, yeah, hope it was tuned, and like come back to the kitchen. I would send a message being like, hi, oh, just checking the piano's tuned, and then yeah, I'd always like immediately get there, unload my car from all my music equipment, put on some music, and then like reshuffle the house, and like if the piano's in the kitchen or whatever, I'd like move it, take a desk from somewhere, like put a lamp somewhere, like create some kind of ambiance, and be like, ha, huh, okay, this is this week's studio.
I've got visions of you like knocking on the neighbor's door, just being like, I'm staying next door. Yeah. Do you mind helping getting the? I need to get a piano stairs,
No. I actually wouldn't. I would try and ignore any neighbours because I knew I'd probably be making a lot of noise late at night. So I just thought I won't show my face and hopefully no one complains.
Yeah. Did you find any like cozy spots? Like, did you go anywhere in particular that you were like, this is great? Like, this is exactly the type of space I need to be creative.
They were all pretty kooky and pretty scary, to be honest. Especially because I'd turn up alone. So like the first night, you'd be a bit eerie and like getting to know the house. But I think the first one I went in was Imogen Heap's house.
Oh.
And that was actually a studio.
Right.
And her house is insane. She wasn't there. She rents it out now.
Right.
But it's like, I think it's one of the only roundhouses left in the UK, and it has this huge spiral staircase in the middle, and all the rooms kind of circle all around it, and then the studio's in the basement. And that was a pretty inspiring place to be. Yeah, it's beautiful.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, a podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap. Hosted by MC8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangsta rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangsta rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's go.
I've got a final couple of things I want to talk to you about before we wrap up. But on YouTube, you share lots of different stuff, one of which is like a series that you've been doing where you cover songs. And you've been doing for this for quite a while and also done it with loads of different artists, Georgia, Sigrid, SG Lewis, like loads of people that you've kind of roped in to basically do cover versions. You set yourself an hour to basically recreate, reversion, reshape a song and share it. How has that gone? And like, in all honesty, when has it gone? What are some of your favourite times when you think it's gone really well? And what are the certain times when you've gone, this has gone terribly wrong?
They're all really kind of a lot because it's quite intense. Sometimes I'm meeting the people for the first time. I've messaged them or whatever. And you got cameras on and it is a bit like, yeah, it's real social anxiety. I thought, what was a good one? I thought the Birdie one became really good because the studio we'd booked was awful. It was like this horrible little box and you could tell that like people had been in there hotboxing it. And like Birdie's so like quaint and gentle and it just wasn't a beautiful studio at all. And anyways, we did Blinded by Your Lights. And then I think it turned out really, really nice. And a lot of people talked to me about that one. The Tom O'Dell one was funny because he kind of came in. I'm not even sure he really had a concept of what it was. I'm mates with Tom and he just kind of came in quite a Tom fashion, was like, oh, Griff, I've got to leave in 20 minutes. I was like, what the...
The idea is it's
1 hour, Tom. So then I was like, oh, get on the piano. And then we did the Billie Eilish one. So that one was kind of funny.
I quite like the one you did with Sigrid was good because it sort of just all fell apart. And then you were just like, okay, new idea. We've got like 15 minutes left.
But yeah, I'm trying to remember what song I did with Sigrid, actually. I can't remember.
Was it a Taylor Swift song?
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah.
I think we switched halfway through or something.
You were both really funny on that one as well.
Like, good.
It was good. I think you both embraced the fact that it seemed to be just sort of going
pear-shaped. Yeah, exactly. I know. It also depends how, like, I'm feeling as well. Because, like, I don't really produce very well under pressure. I, like, need time and space. And then suddenly I'm like, ah! And then also, like, pulling up a terrible synth sound and then hearing the other artist judge me. It's just awful. yes, it's fun.
It's called Against the Clock, I should say. So if anybody wants to go and check it out, it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I guess my final question was just about like your plans and your ambitions for like the next kind of like year or two. I don't want to get like too far ahead because, you know, you've been, you're like, from my kind of outside perspective, you're kind of, you seemingly are quite prolific. Like you've been writing a lot of songs. You've shared like a quite a lot of music the last couple of years. What are you kind of like headed for? What are you hoping for? And what kind of artist would you like to be in terms of like a level? It's an odd question to say, I'm just saying, like, I guess I'm asking, you know, is this really about like longevity? Do you really just want to like try and write as many like timeless songs that mean something to people as possible? Are you thinking like, I really want to, you know, having shared a stage with Coldplay and Dua Lipa and stuff, you're thinking like, I want to play stadium shows because, you know, you've always said that you're so passionate about the song and songwriting, like ahead of like the kind of being an artist, being the kind of the face of it almost, that I'm just really keen to know where you like to take things.
Myself.
Yeah.
I've had to really deconstruct a little bit what I think is successful, because I think at the beginning, I I guess every artist is kind of their own worst critic, but I definitely thought it'd be quicker and like an overnight thing.
Mm.
So that was like a brutal awakening. And then now it's like, I don't think anyone knows what success is.
Mm.
You know, like with short form and with TikTok, it's like even the way record labels are defining success, is it like how many creations it has? Are we still caring about charts? Do we care about radio? Like, I guess I never thought I would be like someone who really was attached to the mainstream that much, which is funny, which is why I think I found the Brits quite an amazing, but like an accelerated experience, because I never thought I wrote pop songs for the charts, which I think I do, which isn't a bad thing at all. But yeah, I just want to write songs that I love and that move people really. And in terms of level, I don't know, like I'm so inspired by the scale that I've witnessed. And I think anyone who does this is driven to some extent and wants to see and is competitive and like almost likes the sadistic challenge of like beating yourself. So I wouldn't lie by saying I didn't look at stadiums and arenas and get super inspired. I would love that one day, but I don't want to put that too much on a pedestal almost. Mm. Chris actually said to me, he was like, do you write down what you want to do? Because he always did that.
Mm.
He would write down like, I want to do Glastonbury, and then he did it. And that's one, it's a cool way of kind of, I guess, manifesting your career. I would just like a nice fan base that are there whenever I'm ready to release a song. I think like Adele does that really well.
Mm.
I think Frank Ocean seems to have the most ideal cult following, where you can just disappear and then reappear. Lord, I think, does it. I don't think I desire to be this front-facing, chatty person on camera. I thought I'd be a songwriter. I didn't think I'd be an artist. So I think the careers that I like the look of is like Lord and Frank and Adele and James Blake.
I could definitely see you having like watched your collaboration, because you generously share it with the outside world. What an amazing producer you'd be and collaborator for other artists when they come to put their work together.
I would love that one day. Yeah. Yeah. Because that was really the goal. There's a lot of songs where I was like, give it away, pitch it out. And I think I'm happy that I've landed here. But I honestly find so much fulfillment, and I get such a rush out of writing a good song, that whatever happens after the day I've written a song, I honestly find so laborious. So whether it's writing a song for me or writing a song for other artists, I kind of just get gassed out of the idea of both of them.
Midnight Chats is a joint production between Loud and Quiet and Atomized Studios for iHeartRadio.
It's hosted by Stuart Stubbs and Greg Cochran, mixed and mastered by Flo Lines, and edited by Stuart Stubbs.
Find us on Instagram and TikTok to watch clips from our recordings and much, much more. We are Midnight Chats Pod.
For more information, visit loudandquiet.com.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday,
the
podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.